From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 1-800-NOW-OPEN or open.com.
Michel Roland is the most famous wine consultant working today. He's been dubbed the Flying Winemaker, and he's more than earned that nickname because he works with clients not only in his French homeland, but also throughout Europe and in Chile, Argentina, the United States, even India and Morocco. It is my great pleasure to welcome him now to my program. Bonjour.
Good morning.
I imagine many people aren't familiar with the role of a wine consultant. What's a typical day on the job like?
Oh, it's very variable, but normally wine consultant is working since the vineyard until bottling. We can tell, so depends of the moment in the year we are. And sometimes we can go to the vineyard to taste grapes. Sometimes we can taste wine from the tanks. Sometimes from barrels. We are following the wine along the aging time.
Because wine now is both in the northern and the southern hemisphere, you can spend time in the United States, in France and Europe for part of the year, and then go down to South America.
Absolutely, absolutely. My schedule is very tight, but now I'm mostly in northern hemisphere because we are resting in the United States and in Europe. And beginning December, I'm going to southern hemisphere to see the vineyard and to understand the new vintage for 07.
So this is harvest time in the United States and in France?
Absolutely, absolutely. This year, normally, Napa, because I'm going mostly in Napa. Napa is harvesting a little bit earlier than Bordeaux, but this year both are harvesting more or less at the same time.
One winemaker once told me that as far as he was concerned, winemaking is really farming and then you do some other stuff later.
Yeah, definitely. That's a big change in terms of in the winemaking in the last 20 years, because before the winemaker was not looking too much to the grapes and was just receiving the grapes to the winery and doing the best, of course, to have the best wine. But now we understand, in fact, there is not a really great winemaker. There are mostly great grapes. So we are working more and more in the vineyard.
How many clients do you advise in a typical year?
Around, I'm telling always around 100, but that's more or less the number. I think
that's
a little bit more now.
It's 100. That means you're running from farm to farm, in effect, from wine,
yeah,
from vineyard to vineyard.
Yes, but we have to consider. I have assistant working with me, and I'm not spending the same time everywhere. Depends of the relationship we have or commercial relation we have with the winery. But mostly, I have 100 or 105 clients all over the world.
Well, somebody must think that what you do is valuable because many of these people were already well known as winemakers before they asked you to be a consultant. What do you give them that they don't already? What kind of advantage do you give them so that they would want to pay you to advise them?
I don't know personally, but we can imagine. You know, I began 30 years ago, so if I was not giving something positive to my clients, certainly they fired me for a long time.
Were you born in Bordeaux?
Yes, I'm born in Bordeaux.
So if you hadn't been born there, do you think that you would be doing this?
No, never. You know, it's funny because my family was in wine business, and never we sink, and my family sink. I can do something different as wine business, but maybe more working in the family property, but never as international consultant, obviously.
Well, to be a wine consultant, you have to have a very sophisticated palate. You have to have a very subtle palate, notice things that other people might not notice. So is that a physical thing, or does that also just come out of having come out of the a family that was in the wine business?
Yeah, certainly there is part of my culture, but also there is part of my physical aptitude to taste the wine. But in fact, we never know why.
Mm-hmm. Well, you, as we said earlier, you give advice on methods of growing grapes, and many growers perform green pruning early in the season. What's that, and is that something you recommend?
Yes, it's quite new because before everybody was receiving the grapes the nature gave us, and now we are controlling the crop load, and that means we are going to the vineyard, and if we think there is too much grapes, we can drop down grapes and to keep exactly the amount of grapes we want, regarding the quality of the wine we want to produce, and in fact is to get ripe easily, because the key to make good wine is to pick ripe. If you have a plant with too much fruit, it's not getting ripe good or well, and so we drop down fruit to make the right balance to have the right fruits.
And when you have too many grapes in a bunch, they are all competing for the same nutrients, so you get rid of some of them, and then you get richer grapes, the ones that are left.
Absolutely.
But you know, you also, as you suggest, tell people when they should harvest their grapes, and you have been known as a risk taker for sometimes leaving grapes on the vine quite long. Has that ever backfired on you?
Yeah, you know, my philosophy is very simple. I thought long time ago to make the best wine, we have to be ripe. And to be ripe means we don't have to pick green, but ripeness is not so easy to find the definition. So I have a good definition for ripeness. I don't know if you play golf, but when you are doing for people playing golf, when we are doing a putting, you know, we have a ball, we have a putter, and we have a hole. You hit the ball. If your shot is too small, your ball never get to the hole. If your shot is too long, stroke is too long, your ball is going over the hole. But in fact, the right stroke is going to the hole. Ripeness is almost the same. Sometimes we are short, sometimes we are long, but most of the time we are in the hole.
But you can make an interesting wine if you do it short or if you do it long, can't you? It would just be different.
I don't think so. It's very simple because, you know, the great difference. It's a good question and long answer. But I think for the ripeness, better is your terroir. Longer is the window you have to pick at the right moment. Smaller is your terroir. Smaller is the window you have to pick. So it's very tricky.
Now, terroir is this French idea that the soil and the microclimate are a key to what makes a great wine. And so you can actually have two winemakers just across the road from each other. One is making a much better wine, and it's because he just has the perfect conditions. The other one has less great conditions. Is that fair?
Yes, it's true, but you know, it's relating. Even you give better example is if you give two type of grapes, 200 meters difference, but not exactly the same soil, not exactly the same terroir, at the same winemaker, even the guy is doing exactly the same process, the wine will be different. That's the terroir.
My guest is Michel Roland, the most famous wine consultant working in the world today. One of the things that also goes into winemaking, I'm thinking of Bordeaux because that's where you come from, different different grapes are harvested, and then they're made into wine. Correct me if I get this wrong. And then eventually they're blended together in different proportions each year. And that is a major consideration in making wines. How do you know? How do you determine which ones, 12% of this, 35% of that, 52% of the other one?
That's my job, and I don't have a secret on that. But you know, when you taste wine, obviously Bordeaux is doing blends. We are speaking left bank more Cabernet Sauvignon, right bank more Merlot. But in fact, we are blending Merlot with Cab Franc and some Cabernet Sauvignon, and Cabernet Sauvignon with Merlot and some Cab Franc. But in fact, the final wine is a blend, and blending is a very nice job, and this is mostly my job. Where people recognize me a certain talent to do that, and in fact we don't know how we can combine. You know, it's maybe like painting. All the painters are using the same color, but they are not doing the same work on the painting. And for blending, we can have three people with the same samples. And when we have to do the blend, there is one doing better than the other. And certainly, I'm not the worst in this. Work.
Well, are you doing this for yourself or with a sense of who's going to buy the wine? Because I'd guess the majority of winemakers know very little about what they're actually drinking.
Yeah, I'm very clear because my international work, I have to be close to the market because, you know, we can be very artistic in wine business, but at the end we have to sell the wine and we have to find consumers, so we have to know what consumer like.
Well, how can a consumer evaluate the quality of a wine for himself? Let's say someone enjoys wine but finds the subtleties between two Bordeaux's a mystery. You, I'm sure, and others who really know the business will see the difference.
Yeah, of course. I hope we can see the difference. Obviously, there is difference, and even people are not able to recognize the wine everywhere. But I think wine, we have to understand wine is done to enjoy, is done for pleasure, and not to think too much. We have to drink wine during a meal, during a lunch or a dinner, and we have to enjoy wine. So my job is to find how to make in a place because we have different price, we have different type of wines. I have to understand in a place, in a particular place, which type of wine is able to be the best wine for the consumer.
Well, some people in the business have been critical of your approach. I've read that some producers feel you have a formula that basically results in your wines tending to be rich and round, perhaps less expressive of the appellation and terroir from where they come. There's that film, Mondovino, in which it was suggested that you're part of a small group of influential people in the wine business who are creating a kind of international style, and that small winemakers are suffering as a consequence.
No, you know, so I think when you are a little bit powerful, and I think I'm very small actor in a wine business, because 100 wineries all over the world is not a lot. But certainly there is people nervous about me because they don't understand really why I'm doing so many wines all over the world and so many successful wines. That's the problem, and that's making people nervous, sometimes jealous, and that's why there is critics. But everybody doing something little bit different as the other, or at the beginning there is critics. But in fact, the reality is very simple. And you know, the wines successful in the market Why? Because I'm not doing all everywhere the same wine. Is we have to just to taste wine to understand very easily is not the same wine.
In fact, you're making a wine in Argentina that is made with a grape that people in Bordeaux use for a little bit of blending, but don't really take very seriously. In Argentina, the Malbec is the dominant grape.
Of course, because
and what are you doing there? Have you actually become a winemaker?
No, that's why your name is on the bottle. Yeah, absolutely. Because I'm doing the blend. I'm doing blending, and blending is a final operation. So that's why my name is on the bottle. But in fact, I'm not winemaker. You know, I'm working with winemaker, and my job is not to make wine. I'm not working in the winery and doing pumping over or doing whatever racking or anything about the wine. But my job is like a coach in football or like a coach in baseball. I just give to the winemaker my feeling. I try to convince them because my feeling is like that. They have to do that. And in fact, they are doing the wine. I'm not doing the wine.
But you're making these Malbecs in a very French style in Argentina, and it's kind of still Argentinian wine. What's happening in France? Bordeaux, I gather, has a huge harvest this year, but prices remain high, and there are people who are concerned that a lot of wine won't be sold. And then I've been reading press reports of violent protests, mostly in the southern wine appellations, with growers saying that the French government has been neglecting winemakers in economic trouble, and they've destroyed millions of gallons of wine, even injured staff members of national agricultural offices. So is wine in crisis in France?
Yeah, but we have to consider the wine market is completely a different level, and when we can hear the wine is going well, the price are rising, but it's not for everybody and not everywhere. But we have to consider France is one of the biggest producers in the world, because we are at the first place with Italy, and so we have completely different type of wine and completely different type of problem. Even Bordeaux this year, Bordeaux for the great grower or the great brands, was expensive, but not too expensive, because is all sold. So the price is good when you have a consumer to buy it, and is sold. So it was not expensive. And behind that, we have very cheap wine, and even cheap, the market is still complicated.
Many people have said that America is the future because wine drinking is increasing in this country, where in France it seems to be actually decreasing. Do you see America as the future?
Yeah, I think America is a very good market, definitely, because it's a huge market and there is a lot of people drinking wine. There is wine lovers. There is wine. There is people knowing wine. And so I think this is a good market. But, you know, France is decreasing, but we were at 124 liters per capita 30
That's a lot
years
of
ago.
Wine.
Yeah, it was too much wine. And now we are at 57. And United States is around 8 per capita, so we have margin to go at the same level. What I'm hoping is America going to 57 like France.
I understand that Robert Parker's nose is insured. He's a famous wine critic. Is your palate insured?
No. No. I'm more modest than that. And, you know, because my palate, so now I hope is still good. But I never had this idea to insure my palate.
Just one other thing. We're starting to see some pretty good wines being made with screw tops. What is your feeling about plastic corks, real corks, and screw tops?
But you know, for me, the worst for wine, because there is a lot of people working 1 year to make the best and to do the best wine, and after that, the wine is going to the table at the consumer table, and you open the bottle, and the bottle is corked. This is the worst life for a bottle. So I don't know how to change the cork now, and to have something very good as the cork sensation or the cork noise, but we have to avoid corked bottle, because it's the worst for wine.
But you're still putting corks in your bottles, including the Clos de los Siete, the Argentinian wine that has Michel Roland's name on it. Michel Roland is in New York for just a brief time, and I'm so pleased that he took the opportunity to stop by and talk with us today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.